Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and now we'll continue our series Silver Liner Notes when we take a look back, 25 years back, at a spectacular time for music, 1998. We've covered the boy band moment with NSYNC, the country music moment with the Chicks, the indie moment with Neutral Milk Hotel, and the pop dance moment with Madonna. Now we're going to talk about how 1998 was a moment for electronic music with an album from the Scottish group Boards of Canada. The album was called Music Has the Right to Children. Boards of Canada is a duo, brothers Michael and Marcus. They grew up using tape machines and tape in ways that weren't designed to be used. The result was modern electronica that was somehow kind of nostalgic. Let's listen to a little bit of their track, Pete Standing Alone. ...1998's Music Has the Right to Children was Boards of Canada's first full-length album release, and it helped launch some subgenres of electronic music. And by the way, the name Boards of Canada comes from the National Film Board of Canada, which produced much of the source content they drew from, animated educational films the brothers actually grew up watching. Joining me now to talk about it is Wall Street Journal music critic Mark Richardson, who's formerly the editor-in-chief at Pitchfork, where he wrote a review of Music Has the Right to Children. He called it a beat music touchstone, a record that took the previous decade of home listening electronic music and essentially perfected it. Mark, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Allison.
Let's talk about these two musicians, these brothers, Michael and Marcus. When they were first starting to experiment with music, what kinds of things were they doing?
Well, they started making music together in the 80s, and they made some early tapes in sort of in the rock vein, but they were always very interested in collecting old gear and old tape machines and seeing how they could process sounds on their own. So starting throughout the 90s and the early 90s, they started releasing some things on tape, and then eventually some singles, a couple of EPs, and that led up to Music Has the Right to Children.
They don't speak in public much about their music, but we have a clip from one of their few interviews when they appeared on the BBC's Radio 1 on the John Peel show. Here's John asking them about where they live.
Telephone or somewhere very remote, is this true?
Yeah, that's just about correct, actually.
I'm not going to ask you where it is, because obviously you don't want people coming there and spoiling it all for you.
Yeah, no, I think it's probably been exaggerated a little bit, but I think as far from technology as we can get is about as good as we can get, as far as we're concerned, yeah.
Well, that does make. And what is your favourite letter of the alphabet?
M.
Is it? Yes, yeah. I always liked M myself. Rest of the session gone well for you, has it?
It certainly has, yeah.
Right, so what are you going to do now? Back to your secret lair to do more tunes?
We're off to the pub, actually.
Right, OK. Oh, so you're not completely sort of aesthetic then? Just...
No, not at all.
Is there anything in their music that lets us know that they are like remoteness and quiet and are somewhat introverted? Except in the pub.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, one of the things that makes their music really interesting is that, you know, they grew up in on the coast of Scotland. So it was a small town, and their music really reflects a kind of rural mindset. You know, it even though it's electronic music, it's made with synthesizers. It's not urban music. It's more based in different kinds of folk music, even though they're using synthesizers.
Now, they'd released singles and EPs before this album, Music Has the Right to Children. What did they set out to do with this album?
Well, so this was really like a perfection of what they'd been doing before. And actually, some of this music had been released in various forms before that. But they really made like a full-length album that works from start to finish. And it's built very carefully as an album, as a listening experience that's about a little over an hour long. And it's, you know, one track builds on the next. There are a lot of really interesting minute and a half long interludes. So it really kind of flows as one long cinematic piece.
Oh, I like that. That's so interesting. So this is one of those that you sit down at the beginning and you listen to the whole thing all the way through.
Yes, absolutely. And every time you hear a track, you're in your mind, if you hear a track in isolation, you're like, where's the track that led into it? Because it all kind of works as one piece.
My guest is Mark Richardson. He is a music critic at the Wall Street Journal. We are talking about Boards of Canada's album, Music Has the Right to Children, celebrating its 25th anniversary. It's part of our Silver Liner Notes series. Let's play the track, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Bokuma.
That sounds right, yeah.
And you wrote the melody we're about to hear, quote, becomes a lump in the throat meditation on man's place in the universe through subtle pitch shifts and just the right mist of reverb. Let's listen. Journalist is, when you have music that doesn't have lyrics, how do you approach understanding what the song's about?
Well, in their case, they give you some interesting, their titles actually give you some hints about some of the inspirations behind the music. And, you know, the title, Bokuma being a little bit of a not the best example, but they have songs on here like Turquoise, Hexagon Sun, The Color of Fire, Rue the World. So they have a lot of these tracks kind of hint at ideas of childhood. Mm-hmm. And from the album title on down, themes of memory and childhood, and in some ways like the way that we don't remember things perfectly but have kind of a distorted memory of what happened. Like, those are all themes that kind of thread through the album, and the titles give you a hint toward that the music fills in.
We're going to listen to the Color of Fire, and it really gives us an example of some of the creative things they were doing with samples. Let's listen to it, and we can talk about it on the other side. Mark, how would you describe what's going on with the vocals there and the production on the vocals?
Well, as you alluded to early on, you know, one of their inspirations was the National Film Board of Canada made educational films that were shown to kids in Scotland, and both of them absorbed, you know, if they were both born in the early 70s. And so if someone who's that age may remember that often in class you would show film strips, and you would have often records played that would accompany the film strips. And, you know, these were used year after year, and they became worn out and stretched. And they like to experiment with sound in a way that reflected that you can hear something aging and decaying and dying right on the tape itself. So, you know, a song like this, it's nostalgic in the sense that it evokes childhood, but it's also creepy. You know, it's like there's a darkness to it, which is one of the things that sets them apart. They have both nostalgic childhood memories mixed with like creepiness and fearful sounding music.
That's the kind of thing you're walking down the street listening to, you're thinking, God, if anybody else heard what I was listening to, they'd move away from me.
It's very, exactly, yeah.
My guest is Mark Richardson. He's a music critic for the Wall Street Journal. It's our Silver Liner Notes series, the 25th anniversary of Music Has the Right to Children from Boards of Canada. So you mentioned this a little bit, that they would just take tons of fragments of things, and they could end up with 400 song fragments and then cull them into a certain number of songs, and then whittle it down again to maybe 20 or 22 that would make the album. How can we see that process on this record?
Well, the individual tracks, you know, there's always a beat. There's a lot of loops, and they bring sounds in and out. But it's kind of like every individual sound suggests that a different track that it could have been part of. So you hear all these small pieces, and it's very much a collage kind of approach. But unlike a lot of music that you might hear in that vein, it's ultimately very melodic and memorable. So they do craft these tunes that stick in your mind, that kind of like, you know, get your foot tapping and have you humming the melody, while there's all these samples of, you know, like the distorted voices we heard, or there's a song with seagulls flying through, or different kinds of clicks and warbles. And the sum of it all is what really makes their music special. The fact that it's this very musical, melodic music with all these unusual collage sounds in it.
Let's listen to another track, and we can talk about it on the other side. From Boards of Canada, this is Aquarius. So, Mark, this album came in at number 2 in a rundown of Pitchfork's list of best albums of all time in the genre known as intelligent dance music. How are Boards of Canada in part responsible for intelligent dance music?
Sure. So intelligent dance music, that term was developed in the early 90s, and the 90s were a very exciting time for electronic music, and a lot of the energy in electronic music went into dance music. And if you remember the 90s, in terms of computer technology, digital technology, everything was changing very fast. And intelligent dance music as an idea was that while there's all this great music for the dance floor, for clubs and raves, there's also this electronic music that is for listening to at home. It's for chilling out by yourself, putting it on in your living room, et cetera. And I think Boards of Canada, that's really all they did. They never made dance music. They never made tracks that were meant for the dance floor, even though it was related to dance music. So they kind of specialized in this area, and they ended up being very, very good at making this music for late nights, potentially alone and just chilling out in front of your stereo or with your headphones.
Now you have something you can do. This is some weekend plans you've just made for a lot of folks. Music Has the Right to Children. It is from Boards of Canada. It was our choice for Silver Liner Notes. The album came out in 1998. My guest has been Mark Richardson, current music critic at the Wall Street Journal. Thank you so much for walking us through the record.
Thank you so much, Allison. Great fun.
Let's go out on Boards of Canada with Wildlife Analysis from Music Has the Right to Children.